Hi, Royals fans. This is J.J. Piccolo. The University of Kansas Health System is the official health care provider of the Kansas City Royals. Get the major league care you deserve at kansashealthsystem.com/royals.
Mahomes, shotgun snap, drops back five, got the block. They come on the side, he winds up, he throws a long pass, wide open hill, catches the ball at the 22 of San Francisco. What a play by Mahomes!
NFL Live, weekdays at 7 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Presented by Easton Roofing and Miller Lite.
Kansas City has won their first Super Bowl in 50 years. 50 years, a lifetime.
Good evening, Kansas City, and welcome into NFL Live KC right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, your nearly nightly source for NFL news and reports going on all around the country. I'm Todd Lebo. I'll be here with you until 8 o'clock. Then we'll turn it over to the Sporting Kansas City show, and we'll wrap up the night with our good friend Josh Briscoe, as we always do with almost entirely sports. He'll join us a little bit later on NFL Live KC to preview that and talk a little NFL. I know there's been a lot of stuff happening in college football that's been the front page stuff with a lot of folks, but you know, the pros are kind of moving along. You know, they've already got everything figured out on how they're going to operate the games and how they're going to operate camps. The Chiefs have been having availability, and that will really begin in earnest on Friday when they'll kind of almost be daily talking to us as practice really gets going. They've been on the field doing some things, but they just haven't had the availability that, you know, we're used to up at St. Joseph because of the shift on the times. So that will kind of start on Friday. It'll be a little bit more regular from the Chiefs as far as that goes. And it'll feel a little bit more like camp. Now, of course, this was supposed to be like already in games and things like that, you know, the exhibition games, and those aren't happening this year. For me, I'm just fine with that, honestly. I don't personally need exhibition games to watch. Now, I think they are important for the teams, and I think rookies will kind of be a little bit behind to not have those actual, you know, times on the field to get to compete against other teams at full speed. So they're going to miss out on that. But the Chiefs have a plan to kind of work their rookies into it. And they say they've been very attentive during all the off-season stuff. So that is important. But, you know, the thing that people have talked about a lot at this point, you know, since we haven't had games or anything, is, you know, can the Chiefs repeat? Are they starting a dynasty? We've heard the run it back, and everyone the Chiefs have had talking about that, and all the players returning. Sammy Watkins with the, you know, team-friendly contract, Patrick Mahomes with the extension, Chris Jones re-signing when a lot of people thought that was an impossibility to get that done. So they've got that feel about that, and that was a topic today on Good Morning Football on the NFL Network. And Nate Burleson, that was one of the topics he was talking about, and he says it's more than just what happens on the field.
For me, it's a matter of motivation, and success is often determined by what motivates you. For some guys, it's the Super Bowl ring. Other guys, it's individual accolades like a Pro Bowl or being an All-Pro. Other dudes, it's just making money, like every other kid who leaves colleges and wants to make a few dollars. So I wanted to check out the money. I want you guys to look at the contracts over the last couple of seasons. Let's start at the bottom. Honey Badger, $42 million. Travis Kelce, $46 million. Tyreek Hill, $54 million. Chris Jones, $85 million. Frank Clark, $105 million. And, of course, we saw Pat Mahomes break the bank with that $500 million contract with $450 million over 10 years. The reason I wanted to bring this up, though, is because that is a motivating factor. Now these guys have reached the mountaintop. Most of these guys are recognized as the best players in the league at their position. I was once told after I got drafted, this was a day after I got drafted, I'm downtown Seattle, I'm hanging out, celebrating with my family and friends. Jamal Crawford, who's been in the NBA for a long time, one of my close friends, he walks up to me, he's like, "Hey, Nate, man, congratulations, you're about to start your career." He takes a breath, he stops, he leans in even closer, and he kind of whispers in my ear. He says, "Remember, money doesn't change you. It just exaggerates who you already are." Hmm. And he leaned back and he walked away. I enjoyed my night. It kind of flew over my head. But then the longer I lasted in the league, the more I realized how much I chase money is going to determine how motivated I am. So the reason I bring this up, these guys are either going to be one or two things. They're going to be completely full because they've had the success, the fat pockets, or they're going to be even hungrier. So I wanted to bring up that graphic to show you how many guys have reached that payday. Is that going to be a motivating factor? Is it going to be something that is going to take away the hunger of the squad?
That's Nate Burleson from Good Morning Football talking about the Chiefs and how maybe they'll handle the off-the-field stuff. And that's the part that's going to be important. This has been, it's an unprecedented off-the-field, post-Super Bowl hangover time. Because normally these guys go all around the country, the world. They're on all the TV shows and they're going to banquets and everyone's telling them all this great stuff. That stuff all came to a standstill in February. So this has not been the same kind of offseason that everyone else would have coming off a Super Bowl championship. Don't know if that's good or bad. It's just never happened before. I think it's probably good because there's been a lot less travel and kind of doing those things and have everyone pat you on the back. And precious few chances to go do that. And the Chiefs have been very focused. And that's one of the things that Adam Teicher was talking about on The Zone with Jason Anderson today, was they have some real leadership in the locker room to keep them focused on the task at hand, which is trying to repeat.
You just don't know how the Chiefs are going to respond to all this. You just don't. I mean, there's no question that what happened in the AFC Championship game 2 years ago was a factor in what the Chiefs got done last year. And he's right. There's a lot of guys who have big bank accounts now, and how is it going to affect them? I that's illogical to wonder that. The only two guys with new contracts, big new contracts, are Mahomes and Chris Jones, right? I mean, Matthew got his last year, and Frank Clark got his last year, and Tyreek Hill got his last year. So, these guys played with a lot of these guys have been playing with big money for at least 1 year now. So it's not new to them. So that part of it is not new. And I don't sense that, certainly not Pat Mahomes, but also Chris Jones are going to give it up now that they've got these big, huge contracts that they're playing on. Another factor I think is in the Chiefs' favor is the two prominent locker room voices I just don't see as the kind of guys being satisfied.
Yeah.
And that's Matthew and that's Pat Mahomes. I think they'll handle that part of it. And if they see some guys slacking off or not doing the things necessary, I feel like those guys are the kind of guys that would handle that. So I think the leadership, that kind of leadership that can help alleviate these problems that come with winning and that come with big contracts and that kind of thing, I think the Chiefs have the kind of leaders to kind of alleviate a lot of that. So we'll see if I'm right or not, but it is something to watch. There's no question, and I think it's maybe even made worse in a year like this one, where there's just so much unknown and you just don't know.
Yeah, that's Adam Teicher. He was on The Zone earlier today with Jason Anderson and talking about that leadership, and that's one thing the Chiefs definitely have. They've got some real vocal leadership at the most important positions. That's really important. So I don't feel that they're going to have much issue dealing with any hangover and all that stuff. Andy said on Sunday he didn't particularly like when guys are talking about winning multiple championships, but he knows they know that. Just go say your stuff. You get asked a question, you talk about it, you tweet about it, whatever. It's time to go to work, and the Chiefs are doing just that. Hey, we're going to work right now. We're going to take a quick break on NFL Live KC. When we come back, we're going to hear from Seth Kaiser from The Athletic, breaking down what he thinks about the rookie running back Clyde Edwards-Helaire, who much will be expected of this year. Welcome back into NFL Live Kansas City. On this Tuesday night, I'm Todd Lebo, having a little bit of fun and games. We'll have the Sporting KC show coming up for you at 8 o'clock, then almost entirely sports with Josh Briscoe at 9 o'clock. We'll hear from Josh a little bit later in this show as well. Let's hear now from our good friend Seth Kaiser. Lewis Riddick from ESPN had tweeted yesterday that Clyde Edwards-Helaire should be the first pick in your fantasy draft this season. So I asked Seth, is that too much to ask for someone who's never even really had an NFL practice yet?
Absolutely. It's an incredibly tall order, and they're going to be asking a lot of them, especially with Damian Williams opting out for the year. And I think that's, a big part of it, understanding the size of the opportunity he's going to get. Something that I think people need to keep in mind is that traditionally when Andy Reid has had a clear-cut number one running back, he generally doesn't do running back by committee. You know, whether you're talking Brian Westbrook or LeSean McCoy or Jamal Charles or Kareem Hunt, when he had a clear-cut number one guy, that number one guy got, by and large, you know, 70% of the touches. I think we forget that because there's been some injuries over the last few years. Things have been kind of goofy, obviously, after Hunt got cut. And so I think we forget the number of opportunities you get as the number one guy in Reed's offense. And I think you can have a ton of them. Like you said, I love his fit. And I do think he has a really, really unique skill set that's going to allow him to excel. And like also, like you said, I mean, Lewis, he knows people in the Chiefs front office. There's a reason why last year he was tweeting about Juan Thornhill. The year before that, he was tweeting about Patrick Mahomes. For me, this isn't what he thinks based on his scouting or anything like that. This is based on probably what he's hearing from the coaches. And if they're thrilled with what he's doing so far, to me, that means he's going to get a lot of opportunities, and that's awesome to hear.
Seth, we had a chance to talk to Andy yesterday on Zoom, and, you know, he's very matter-of-fact about how they're going about their business and how they're not going to be behind because they didn't have OTAs or not having preseason games. I expect him to be that way. He's a true pro. He doesn't falter. He doesn't get ruffled. I mean, he just knows what he's doing. But I do get a little bit concerned for, I don't like preseason football. I know you love it because you like to break the film down, and I love you for that. I would like to have you watch all the preseason games and give me 30 seconds of what I need to watch. That's what I love. But these guys who have never played a pro football game, we don't know what effect not having a preseason game to actually go out there with NFL players will have on them. It can't be a good effect not to have been up against that kind of talent, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's definitely going to be a tough, tough thing, a tall order for rookies this year. A lot of them talk about it's the speed of the NFL, and that's in both a physical and mental aspect of the game, right? I mean, you know, when you're in college, you usually played against teams that only had a couple of future pros on them at the absolute most, and so the athleticism wasn't as great, and the mental processing wasn't as great. And when you combine those, it's just crazy how different things are. One thing I advise people to do, if they've ever got the wherewithal and the means to do it, is to just take a look at what things look like when the quarterback is winding up to throw, and then when the ball's traveling to a receiver. Compare that to college and the pros. The pros are unbelievable, right? They track the ball so quickly. It's freakish. I would say this with regards to Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I do think this type of offseason favors a team like the Chiefs that's really disciplined coming into the same system. With regards to him, the one thing that gives me hope that the adjustment to the pro game won't be quite as big a deal. Now, I'm not one to tell you that, you know, the SEC is a minor league for football or anything like that, but it is interesting that some of his best games did come against some of the top-notch competition, and especially, obviously, if you look at last year when you had the LSU-Alabama showdown, a lot of people walked away thinking that he looked like the best player on the field. And that's against an Alabama defense that is a majority future pros. So that tells me that the speed of the competition, when you watch his film, he looks like the same guy versus all levels of competition. And that tells me that, at least in the physical terms of it, he ought to be able to blend right in. But kind of what you alluded to, it's going to be a mental thing. And we're going to know probably by, I would say, midway through the second quarter, if not sooner, exactly what he's going to bring to the table.
We're talking to Seth Kizer from The Athletic about the Chiefs, and running back is the position that, you know, listen, it's people, the Chiefs have been able to do it with whomever playing running back. I mean, Jamal Charles was great, but they fill in whoever and they get it done. Andy knows how to work that, and they were really something special offensively with Kareem Hunt, and he hasn't been a part of the team, but now they've gone on and won the Super Bowl. So, I mean, you know, he can get it done with these guys. Another guy we haven't talked much about is DeAndre Washington, who I thought was a really talented kind of fit type guy who would have worked in a Chiefs offense when I watched him play at Texas Tech, and he's been okay at times here and there in the National Football League. What do you think his chances are of being some sort of a contributor of note for the Chiefs?
I think there's definitely a chance for it. They've got a really interesting running back situation where even with Damian Williams out of the picture, they've got a decently crowded field. You know, they've got Darrell Williams, who has got some fairly significant playing time due to injuries in previous years. They've got DeAndre Washington, who at times in his career was a guy who's been asked to play fairly significant snaps. He started more than a few games. And so he's got fair amount of things against Darwin Thompson, the guy that the Chiefs really liked last year coming out, who's got some experience as well. So it was actually one of those situations before Damien Williams opted out. I was always wondering, man, who are they going to cut? You know, a recent draft pick that they really like, a guy that they just signed out of Texas Tech who's got a good skill set. It's a tough decision to make. The thing that Washington does have going for him, you know, playing with Mahomes in college, I'm sure, is helpful to an extent. But he really does have that skill set they look for in terms of, you want to talk about guys that resemble Damien Williams, in terms that he's probably a better receiver than he is a runner, runs tight, quick routes, and seems comfortable enough in pass protection. I think that gives him an opportunity to get on the field, especially as a third down guy. But I don't think it's going to be easy to beat out Darrell Williams for that backup spot. He has shown he can be relied upon in pass protection. Obviously, with the $500 million man behind you, that's huge. And he's also shown that he can get it done running the ball and as a receiver. He might not be like a major focal point of the offense when he's in, but he can get it done, do the role he's asked to play. And I think it's going to be tough as the backup to break through on that, especially if Clyde Edwards-Helaire takes the majority of the snaps.
All right, Seth, let's talk some Sammy Watkins. We haven't had a chance to talk to him, well, in a long time, right, because there hasn't been the normal availability you'd have.
Right.
And he obviously said some weird things. I guess I don't know the best way to characterize what was in that article from the end of February or the beginning of March. But then after that, he re-signed with the Chiefs, restructured his deal. And, you know, listen, he said yesterday, why wouldn't I come back? This is my happy place. I've got enough money. You know, he's got an incentive-laden contract. Sammy Watkins has probably made more money than he deserves to have made with the production he's had. But when you get picked number 5 or 4 overall, whatever, you're going to get some dough early. Is he worth the contract that he's on now? And was he worth the contract he was on the last couple of years with the Chiefs?
From my perspective, not necessarily. I think from an overarching perspective, I'm sure if Brett Veach were asked about it, he would, you know, kiss the Super Bowl ring and say, well, what do you think? You know, something like that. And obviously it paid off huge having a guy like him in the Super Bowl and in the playoffs. And so it's a complicated situation in terms of a yes and no. But it is interesting when you look at the treatment the Chiefs have given him in terms of kind of bending over backwards to make sure they kept around. You know, Sammy can talk about what he wants in terms of, you know, he did take a little less money to stick around, but I still don't know what he would have gotten in the open market coming off of a couple of not super impressive statistical seasons, both of which he struggled with injuries. I think he's obviously very physically talented. He's a good route runner. He's explosive. But in terms of living up to the contract that he's had, in terms of consistency, he hasn't. But in terms of helping the team accomplish its goals, in a lot of ways, he has. I don't think they would change anything going back. You know, who knows if Robinson beats Richard Sherman off the press like that, right? But it's a complicated situation with him, and it's going to be interesting to see, because the Chiefs, from everything I can tell, don't view him as complicated. They don't view him as, well, yes and no. They seem to view him almost in the same vein as they view Hill in terms of an elite receiver. And to me, on film, the difference is rather stark. So it's interesting that the Chiefs have continued that view of him despite being, I would say, a decently productive but not great here in Kansas City.
Well, run it back has been the theme for the Chiefs, so I suppose it makes sense to have Sammy Watkins back. And the contract is incentive-laden and very team-friendly, so there's very little risk on the club side there. And if it makes Patrick Mahomes happy, that's good news for everyone. We'll be right back here on NFL Live KC. Welcome back into NFL Live KC, brought to you in part by Miller Lite. I'm Todd Lebo, having some fun here on a Tuesday night, on a pretty dismal day, really, as far as football goes. And this is NFL Live KC, so we're going to talk some NFL and Chiefs with Marcus Spears, who you know from being a Cowboy for a long time, and you see him on TV on ESPN. But the sad part is the fact that the Big Ten and the Pac-12 have decided not to play college football this fall. So that's pretty disappointing news that's come out this week. So I wanted to ask Marcus Spears about his thoughts there, because he was such a part of an LSU team that won a national title back in 2003. So he loves college football, but he says, you know, this is maybe something that was inevitable.
Yeah, man, it's obviously from an emotional standpoint, it's shocking. Even though we knew this could be a possibility, I think it's just difficult to put it in context. Nobody thinks about, well, no one up until this point thought about not having college football. Like, that's for this generation and majority of the people that's living, that's something that we never thought would exist at any point in our lifetime. So just adjusting to the idea of two of the major conferences as of right now not playing the season. But look, I stand in this idea. If medical professionals said it was too much of a risk to play, that's a reason not to play. And I can't go beyond that, because if you get it, there are so many layers to it. You want to personally want to see college football. I've called it a 5-6 month holiday. I have an affinity. The team that I played for and I support just won a national championship. Would love to see them tee it up again. If the SEC decided not to play, you're still waiting on those answers. But, man, right now it's just tough to think about. I don't know if we have a true reaction at this point, because we're not in September. It is not week one of kickoff. I think that's when it's going to hit everybody like this is really happening. Right now, I think it's still like a little shock and all. And some people have been at this point in my business, in conversations, that they knew that this was the inevitable as far as trying to put a football season together in college. So it's a lot of different emotions, man.
Yeah, it's a pretty crazy day. Now, you know, the NFL kind of went through all these things a few months ago and trying to get their protocols together. And it seems like right now everything's going well. You know, the Chiefs have been out here getting practice done here in Kansas City. They hope to start the season on time. The preseason games are out, right? They've got all these protocols in place. What are you hearing from your folks around the league about the NFL and whether or not they think it's going to start on time, number one, and whether they think they can get through a season?
Everything I'm hearing from the NFL is that they start on time and they're going to go through a season. And the difference is that these guys have a union that they're represented by, and they can make decisions as they go. Now, if if COVID just runs rampant through NFL locker rooms, you're going to have to either cancel or postpone it. But I think the league will start on time. The difference in college, there's no one representation for the players. So making these decisions was that much more difficult, because everybody feels differently about how to go forward as far as the season goes. And then when you look at the league, like, this was, you know, the league had their trying times in contract situations about how they would trudge ahead with the season, players' compensation, get those things agreed upon. We saw it in Major League Baseball as well, where the union and the commissioner's office and the owners were like, look, this is what we're going to do. This is a plan. Let's put it in place. We saw the Marlins team and run rampant. Some guys from the Philadelphia Phillies get it. So, look, everybody is going forward as far as the pro league, because the NBA is in a bubble. The WNBA is in a bubble. But they're represented. The players are represented. So it's as simple as you and I having a conversation. Hey, man, you want to play this game? Hey, you know COVID out here, you know it exists. There are some, these are the cons to what could potentially happen. Do you want to play? And you say, yes, I want to play. I know the problem. And I say, okay, we're going to play. So we've agreed upon that. Now, we willing to deal with whatever comes along with that. Comes to college, too complex, because players are all over the place. Families are involved. There are more than one person deciding how they want to go forward. And to me, that's what ended up being that, coupled with, no, the medical information, coupled with the fact that there is not one lane for a group to agree upon on either side and say, we're going to do this no matter the risk. caused us to be where we are today.
Marcus Spears from ESPN is our guest, and you went to LSU, as you mentioned. A lot of Tiger blood on the Chiefs. Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, has been a major part of the leadership for the Chiefs. They just went and drafted Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the number one pick for the Chiefs, the 32nd pick overall. I know you like to see that stuff. You know, listen, if the Chiefs bring back dang near everybody off their team, right, and they won the Super Bowl last year, what do you think about any Super Bowl hangover for a team that seems to be ready to run it back right now?
I don't think they're going to have a hangover. And the reason why is because we had a chance to have Sammy Watkins on first tape, I think about 3 weeks ago. We had Ty Hill on first tape. These dudes having fun, man. And that's the key. The key is not putting yourself in this pressurized situation and just going out with your brothers and balling out. They want to win. They want to continue to win. They got Chris contract done, Chris Jones. They bring in Kalichael Assembly at guard, obviously, to solidify that. Who can play? I played with Kalichael in Baltimore. He signed a big deal with the Raiders, so Pat Mahomes is going to be protected, and they're going to exhaust everything, make sure he's protected. But this is prime for them to make run after run because of 15, obviously, and that's the centerpiece. But when you look at how this team is built, surrounded, you look at guys taking less money so other guys can play, they got the formula. So I don't see any reason for them mentally to lapse because, one, they seem like they all get along and they like each other and they love doing what they do. And that's the best way to defend against a hangover.
Now, 2020 has been a mess for the world, right? We know that. But Brett Veach, the chief general manager, has had about the best 2020 you can ever have. His team won a Super Bowl, and he somehow managed to sign Patrick Mahomes for 12 more years. He got Chris Jones to sign. He got Sammy Watkins to come for cheap. Who's having more fun this year than Brett Veach?
Man, listen, he is doing an amazing job as far as managing and but with as much credit as he gets, for sure, because he's identifying talent and putting it together and understanding that he doesn't want to change the chemistry or the construct of this team, these players deserve a lot of credit for being that available. And Pat didn't have to sign that deal. Pat could have, you know, hey, man, I want $250 million guaranteed. If you can't do it, I'll go somewhere else. So I think it's a perfect match. I think it's a lot about the front office doing their job leading into contract negotiations and making sure they're having communication with players and players are happy about where they are and they have a direct plan for where they want the franchise to go. And I think Beats should get more credit for that more so than signing players, because players have to be willing to play ball when you get to a contract negotiation. But what you do leading up to that is very important, and players recognize that as far as how they want their future to look with any particular franchise. And I think they've done a tremendous job building a culture, a chemistry, an atmosphere, and now you see players willing to sacrifice in order to stay there and also win.
Yeah, the Chiefs really have had it going on pretty good, and they're going to be a favorite to kind of go back to the Super Bowl, I'm sure. Now, what we need to have happen is they have to have the National Football League season start and end. And they've got all their protocols in place, and hopefully those things will continue to work well, because the fear in the NCAA was that those things weren't going to work, and that's why we're not having a college football season that we would have recognized. We will wait and see what happens with a couple of these other leagues. But as we've been talking about all day on Sports Radio 810, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are out as far as college football goes this year. Now, who's not out is Josh Briscoe. He will be in here next to talk to us about everything happening in football, and look forward to what he's got coming up tonight on Almost Entirely Sports. Welcome back into NFL Live, KC. I love Tuesday so much. Number one, I like to have NFL Live, KC, but I always like to talk to Josh Briscoe, and I don't always get to see Josh Briscoe.
Here I am.
And I get to see Josh Briscoe now.
Love a Tuesday.
Love a Tuesday.
Todd's day.
Well, it's your least favorite day because you only get a two-hour show because we have a Sporting KC show coming up. But
it's also my Seth Kaiser day. It's all right.
It's all right. It's your Seth day. It's your me day and your Seth day. Can't beat it.
It's wonderful stuff.
I always say the phrase Seth Kizer Tuesday whenever that segment starts, and almost entirely sports as it will tonight at 10. But I need to start saying it's a Seth Kizer Todd's Day.
Yeah, it's a Todd's Day.
Hey, this is great.
It's like, let's not talk about college football. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
It mostly hasn't happened.
Let's also not talk about the life that is currently on Mars. You know, it doesn't exist. There might be a better chance of there.
There's
a better chance of being life on Mars or the SEC playing football this fall?
There's a better chance of the SEC playing football.
I think you're right.
But I hold out hope, and I'm not blind in my faith of things happening.
Yeah.
But I thought, if anything, there would be some college football this fall,
mm-hmm.
and I don't think there's going to be any college. Because Will Harris from ESPN, who is in the heart of SEC country, mm-hmm. we had him on today on the program, and he's been saying for months there's not going to be college football. He's just like, nothing surprising me. I've been telling you guys this forever. And he says, there's not going to be spring football either. Forget about that.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
I'm choosing to be optimistic about spring football just because it would be the greatest spring football league we've ever had.
Well, we all thought this is going to be the greatest fall ever. We're going to have college football. We're going to have pro football. We're going to have the NBA. We're going to have – and now, no.
I got to tell you, and this might be my delusions, and we'll talk about this. We'll talk about the college thing more tonight on AES, so we don't have to dig into that anymore. But I still really do think the NFL is going to make it happen.
I think they will.
And maybe the biggest difference is that they have two sides. I mean, the numbers are obviously in the NFL's favor in terms of number of teams and whatnot, but they have two sides that are directly interested in making the money, because the money goes to both of them. Players and owners make the money in the NFL. It's good for everybody.
Well, we've talked about this many times.
Yes.
College players are compensated.
Not based on revenue
Well,
they're compensated the same way
if
they play.
A lot of pro athletes aren't based on revenue. And you know, people in their regular jobs aren't just based on revenue.
Oh, no, that's true. But it's not a regular job,
though. No, it's not. But I don't like when I watch something on TV and they say unpaid college players. It's not unpaid. It's maybe not compensated in the way that you feel they should be. But there's a difference between being unpaid. Because listen to me. Here's the deal. I've been unpaid.
Sure.
Okay, and there's a difference between being unpaid and being a Division I college football player.
That's true, but the Jazz Bucks, you can't spend those at Walmart, you know? And I love Jazz Bucks.
I'm talking about unpaid, no Jazz Bucks either.
No, for sure. Yeah. I understand that. But
here's what I want you to do for me as my young Gen Z friend.
There. I'm a millennial just barely. I slid under the
I'm
wire.
I'm hoping you're a Gen Z guy.
That's fine. I can be both.
Okay. You're a zillennial.
Yes.
Zoomer. I want you to never say college football players are unpaid again.
I don't know. Did I say it?
No, you didn't. But I just hear people say it because they are compensated in a way that maybe is not exactly the way you'd like to have them compensated.
Those words are different, though. Like, you keep saying compensated. You're right. They are compensated.
Yeah.
But what if I...
Well, they are actually paid money, too. I mean, actual real cash money.
Right.
It's maybe not what you think they should get, but they get a stipend of cash.
They are not paid anywhere near their revenue-based value.
Now,
I can say that confidently.
Let's say maybe Joe Burrow wasn't, but there's an 85th guy on LSU.
Yeah, but
was
also
stealing his stipend checks. Basically,
I was thinking about this a couple days ago, though, and this is NFL related too. We find a way to pay Martinez Rankin hundreds of thousands of dollars, and he may or may not play. He got hurt last year. He's starting this year on the PUP. He's a depth offensive lineman. Greg Sinat is going into his second.
Let's think about this.
He's making a huge amount of money.
Let's think about this part.
We figure it out in the NFL.
We love the NFL. We figure it out in the NFL. Mm-hmm. What's more important, Martinez Rankins or the guy who's in charge of holding the chain gang in an NFL game?
Holding the post
The
guy holding the post is more replaceable.
No, on a particular Sunday, mm-hmm. when Martinez Rankins is not dressed and he got a great big fat paycheck, who's more important?
The guy holding the post is doing more for the game that day, but he's significantly more replaceable.
What do you figure
though?
They pay those guys?
It's an open market. Not a lot of money. I mean, they have fans hold those discs.
What would your guess be?
Oh, do you know the answer?
Yeah.
I mean, it's per game.
Yeah.
I would say every member of the chain gang gets $250 a game.
You are five times above what it is.
Wow.
It's like a $50 deal.
Really?
Yeah.
I almost said $100. So, the NFL's made of money, though.
Yeah, exactly. But here's the deal. They don't give it all to those things, and they're,
no,
they're part of the
game. Well,
but
that's because they can replace them, though.
Well, they can replace Martinez Rankins, too.
Yes.
By the way, they have done that many times.
Many times, absolutely. But those guys still have a certain value and, like, a number that they have to pay them. They make the financials work.
I'm just saying this.
It's also
like college. They make the financials work by telling someone, this is a great honor. You get to stand down there and do this so people would line up to do it for free.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
By the way, how many times have you heard someone say, I love the game, I'd play for free?
I've heard them say it many times. I have not seen a lot of guys hand their checks back.
Exactly.
And so I think everyone would like money. Sammy Watkins said on Sunday, you know, I feel like I made enough money, but he also immediately went, I'd like more money.
Yeah.
And
I was like, he says, I like money.
I do like money.
But I love his attitude.
But yeah.
That he knows that it being in his happy place is more important than making $1 million more.
There's a value on that. Absolutely.
100%.
Absolutely. If it was your first deal and you could make 50 times as much in Cincinnati, maybe it's not. But right now, he's made some money and he's in his happy place now.
All I'm saying is being a Division I Power 5 football or basketball player is not unpaid. And I've heard this word used before, slave labor. It's not.
There are blocks in place to keep them from getting what they would get on anything resembling an open market.
Sure. There is no open market for college football.
Because of the restrictions put into place, though.
You don't have to go to college to go play in the NFL.
There are no viable other options. I'm even willing to have that conversation more so on the basketball front, because you can go play in the G League.
Well,
you can
overseas,
go play overseas.
You can work in a warehouse somewhere and then just go play
sure,
in the
but
NBA.
Sure, but again,
it's not the way to do it.
We have to be reasonable about it on some level.
The greatest path is to go play on Big Monday 12 times.
We've got, right, and that might raise your profile. Or again, overseas,
what would
G
you
League,
pay
whatever.
To have an AES spot play 6 times on Big Monday?
Me personally, yeah. $7.
No, but
that's because I have $7 right now. Oh, I mean, it's worth whatever the ad revenue
is. That would be worth all the money in your pocket. So you'd give everything to have that.
Absolutely.
So there is some value
absolutely,
to being
but I am,
on something.
But I am asking for that. I am paying money for that, which proves that platform is valuable, and it's valuable in part because of the guys who are playing that game at a high, interesting level. It's
sure.
why XFL players were getting paid more than college athletes were, but because of a limiter on that,
also,
a glass ceiling of sorts.
They've tried that league twice and didn't work.
Absolutely.
Because
it
doesn't work to play professional football against the NFL.
That's right.
No matter what you're paying them.
That's right.
It's just not going to work.
It has not been functional. Although if they do play spring college football, I'd be excited about it. I would
Will
watch.
Harris says it ain't happening.
I believe that. I think he's probably right, but I would watch it.
I just
it,
want
though.
You to agree with me that it's not a free deal.
It is not. No, it is not a valueless proposition, but it is so severely undervalued that I feel like the distinction there is
and
narrow.
Perhaps a $70,000 a year tuition at Northwestern is overvalued.
The other, oh,
but it's
oh,
got
yeah,
a value.
No, for sure.
All right.
But the other
I
thing, the other aspect with that, though, where I do think, I think your argument about having the platform is actually more valuable than the argument about the value of a scholarship, because
they both have something.
They both have something, absolutely. But the latter, this is a good episode of NFL Live we're doing.
We're just conversation. We're just talking.
Two dudes talk about football.
Because, by the way, there's no Chiefs availability until Friday again.
Oof,
so,
doof. Okay,
here we go.
Good to know. I think that the one thing that kind of gets moved out of the picture here is that those guys do get scholarships, but that's not why they are there. Their job, I'm going to use the word job liberally, but their job is to do the sport, but they are paid, they're quote-unquote paid in the ability to do the academic side of things. In terms of, like, deciding where your time goes, those are at conflict. Like,
they've got rules about how long they can do these things. I mean, you know, it's just,
no, absolutely. Yeah. But, like, I had media scholarships at Mid-America Nazarene, you know.
But it was totally free?
No, God, no. No.
Would you have gone and played football if it was free? Probably not there, but maybe
probably
somewhere.
Probably not there. My point is, though, that those things often worked in tandem, and sometimes there would be hours where I was trying to, you've got to earn the scholarship doing the thing that your scholarship works for.
Sure.
That can take away from this academic process that everyone points to and say, look at how valuable that was. I don't know how valuable my degree was. I do think my media experience was very valuable. That's happening for these players also. But now you're saying, well, playing for free on a big platform is good for your pro abilities. We spend a lot of this time talking about Trevor Lawrence. the guys who are contributors but not future NFL guys, they are also bringing a value there. And we don't put limiters like this on just about any other sort of free market. We don't do this. We do this in sports on some level with salary caps.
Sports is not a free market.
We like to believe that it is, at least in some part. I do think societally we like capitalism everywhere except for in sports, and we like socialism. Right.
Well,
we like bad teams to get draft picks
Kansas
and everything.
City. It's great for a small town.
And it's great for parity and just keeping teams involved and everything. But having a salary cap set at zero and you get education to hand out, like, I think that's awfully transparent because we pay the coaches in cash. Pay the coaches in cash. Cash builds the locker rooms.
I think they should stop paying the coaches. They should 100% stop putting incentives in coaches for winning. Hmm. I think they should pay the coach. You want to pay a guy $5 million a year, whatever. I don't care. But quit putting something in there that when the players go out and they win the games, the coach gets $100,000.
I think that's interesting.
Or every time that Bob Huggins beats Kansas,
yes,
he gets money.
Right.
I think these schools have done themselves a disservice by putting those in there.
Yeah.
It's a mess.
That's interesting.
Anyway, just food for thought.
Just a little food to chomp on.
Seth Kaiser, what else tonight?
We're going to talk about college football.
Maybe you and Rudy can sit there
and
live in an echo chamber and just agree with each other all the time.
That is what we mostly do. Yeah, we just sit there and agree with one another and talk about how we have like this crazy idea college-age kids should be able to be compensated for their work on a level that would be consistent with their value. Crazy stuff, Lebo.
So
crazy
does that
stuff.
Mean you're going to make people pay to play football at KU?
Yes.
Instead of getting compensated?
Yes. That's where I end up.
That's the rub.
That's the chain gang, guys.
Clemson, you get
they
paid $1 million.
They still have TV deals, though. KU football makes money.
Depends on how many checks they're writing to ex-coaches.
Well, that's true.
Are you in the red or the black?
That's true, and ends up being not about their revenue making, but how they're spending that money, which I am not here to... I'm not going to try to... force KU to make better financial decisions on their football coaches.
Will not. That's Josh Briscoe coming up tonight at 9 o'clock with Almost Entirely Sports. All right, let's wrap up NFL Live KC with some Matt Derrick. He's our Chiefs expert. Now, a big topic that we've had so far on the show tonight is Clyde Edwards-Helaire and what he can do. And Matt Derrick says he's heard nothing but rave reviews about the rookie running back.
Looking at the skill set, and now without Damian Williams in there, could he approach the kind of numbers that Kareem Hunt put up his rookie year? I mean, I think it's in the ballpark. I mean, I wouldn't expect that because, you know, 1,700, 1,800 yards from scrimmage, it's a lot for a rookie, especially in a complicated system like Andy Reid's and without the full offseason. But you're hearing consistently from Andy Reid and the other Chiefs that, you know, his high football IQ, that he's really picking things up quickly. He seems to be very confident in the system. And you look at the skill set, and he should be able to slide into this offense seamlessly. If he fits in as well as it looks like he can in the way that the Chiefs are talking about, then, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be just purely up to workload how much he puts up. I mean, if he becomes the workhorse back, and there's nobody else there that can, you know, chip in 300, 400 yards of offense, then, yeah, I mean, he could be an 1,800-yard kind of guy. The Chiefs are going to put up those yards. I mean, you know the offense is, and they're going to run the football, so it's going to happen. But, you know, I think that the potential is definitely there. I wouldn't expect it because, I think that's still a lot to expect from a rookie. But you're hearing all the right things from everybody around this team about him, as far as just how quickly he's picking things up and the skill set. We'll see. I mean, because at this point, they haven't taken any hit. You know, they haven't been playing real football. It's been, you know, walkthroughs and drills. But so far, so good. I mean, you're hearing exactly what you want to hear about a first-round running back right now.
I do think it's interesting, though. This is an interesting point because we talk about rookies. Ezekiel Elliott's best statistical year was his rookie year. Saquon Barkley's only had 2 years in the NFL so far, but his best year was his rookie year. Does anybody think he's going to surpass that 1,300 yards that he had his rookie year? Maybe he will someday. So I think that Lewis and Kareem Hunt, his best year would have been his rookie year, right? I'm not looking at his stats right now, but I'm guessing it would have been. So I think that what Lewis Riddick is pointing out is running back seems to be a position that you can step right in and produce maybe at the highest level of your career right off the bat.
You can, and that's why I think the potential is there. I think the only real hindrance for any rookie this year is just simply the environment. You know, the fact that you know, he hasn't been able to get on the field and actually test himself and see where he's at compared to his teammates. You know, those OTA practices and the rookies, I mean, basically, good grief, at this point in a normal year with training camp, he'd have almost 30, you know, regular practices under his belt. Right now, essentially has zero.
Now let's move on to another player. We mentioned Sammy Watkins' desire for more targets. You have one of the best wide receivers in football in Tyreek Hill. You have Travis Kelce, who is wonderful. And then we mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and he's going to be a very good receiver out of the backfield. But it feels like Mecole Hardman could have a big year and is ready to take a big step forward as a wide receiver. Where does Mecole Hardman and his tremendous skill set fit in the equation?
Yeah, I'm going to be very interested to see how Hardman does this year, because I wrote this story during Tyreek Hill's rookie year that, you know, rookie receivers under Andy Reid just don't thrive. I mean, you've had a handful of guys that put up some nice numbers. DeSean Jackson came out and obviously played very well at the beginning, but he still wasn't full DeSean Jackson yet his rookie year. And you look at Tyreek Hill, I mean, his rookie year was very pedestrian compared to what he's put up the last couple of seasons. But what Hardman put up last year put him right into that ballpark. I mean, as far as just rookie receivers under Andy Reid, he was clearly a top five guy. And when you look at the, you know, who the top five guys are under Andy Reid as rookies, and you're talking about Jackson, Macklin, Hill, that puts him in line to have that big jump. Now, I think it's going to be tough just based on the offense and the number of targets that are around. He's going to go up and do like what Tyreek did and have 1,100 yards this sophomore season. But he is got that potential, and partly because, you know, he's got that big play stuff within him. So, I mean, he could have, you know, maybe not as big as numbers. Maybe he'll only go for 800 yards. But I think that he is going to be a much better receiver this year because he's going to have a better grasp of the offense. He seems more comfortable. Even during the offseason, he seemed like he was having a better understanding and a better grasp of what's going on. And, you know, the last time I talked to him was at, I believe, the 101 Awards. And, you know, and he said, yeah, I mean, you know, everything your rookie year, you're learning, and it's all brand new, and you're having to soak it all in. He's like, now we're getting to the point where he's like, now everything is routine. He's understanding it. And that plays such big dividends at receiver. And it's such a difficult position to learn under Andy Reid. And very few rookies get it off the box. He played really well in what snaps he got last year. So, like I said, I think it's going to be tough for him to put up 1,100, 1,200 yards with this group of talent around him. But he should be a markedly different receiver this year than he was last year.
We have Matt Derrick on the line. Matt, before we run out of time, I did want to ask you about Tom Pelissero from NFL Network's report yesterday that Alex Okafor has recently agreed to restructuring his contract that will give the Chiefs at least $2 million more in cap space for the coming season. And so that led to a bunch of speculation on social media that maybe Brett Veach is gearing up for one more big move, or they're just setting themselves up to roll over that cap space to next year. What do you think of this latest move and how it impacts the salary cap and what it might mean for the Chiefs?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. I mean, you know, they could be gearing up to make a move, but it looks like with a lot of their moves, they're just trying to clear up some cap space in a position where they can. You know, Okafor's coming off an injury. There's certainly, some questions there. And the deal was kind of built that way that they could, you know, if he didn't perform up to his par this first season or had an injury, that they could maybe rework the contract. This team still needs cap room for next year. And frankly, it needed it for this year. It got some of that relief that it needed with, you know, LDT and Damien Williams deciding to opt out. That gave them enough money to have a full 53 and then, you know, have an injured reserve because you know you're going to have that during the season, have your practice squad. That gave them enough money to do that. You know, a couple of million dollars from Alex Okafor, doesn't really give you the money to go out and spend $9 million on somebody. But as you said, I mean, they need rollover for next year too, because you're going to have LDT and Danny Williams back on the roll next year. So really, at this point, any amount of money that he can carve out anywhere, it's a smart move to make.
There's no doubt about that. The Chiefs have come a long, long way from having just $177 of cap space earlier this offseason. They signed Patrick Mahomes to a long, long extension. Chris Jones is in the fold. Restructured Frank Clark for a little relief, and now the Alex Okafor restructuring. You know, Damian Williams has opted out, right? And LDT has opted out. And, you know, one of their draft picks, Lucas Niang, has opted out. But Brett Veach has had about as good a 2020 as anyone. Now, it's not really saying much, because most everyone's 2020 has been pretty horrible in the sports world. A lot of things have been canceled and all that. But think about Veach's 2020. Made the first ever. Well, it started out when, right before New Year's, the Patriots lost and got the Chiefs a bye and a home game. And they won their playoff games at home, so they got all that revenue from having home games. And then they won the Super Bowl. And then they've restructured and gotten all these deals done to run it back again. Pretty good run for Brett Veach, no doubt about it. That's going to end our run here on this Tuesday night. We're going to go to the Sporting KC show next, then Josh Briscoe coming up at 9. Thanks for listening to NFL Live KC.